2012. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN, for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1@yahoo.com. My regular email is deanna@spingola.com, which I do not access during the program. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Peter Eichstadt. His websites are petereichstadt.com. The spelling of that last name is E-I-C-H-S-T-A-E-D-T. His other website is petereichstadt.blogspot.com. He is the author of several amazing books. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Well, thank you for having me.
Am I pronouncing your last name properly?
Yeah, that's good. Eichstadt. It's, most people just avoid it and call me Mr. Peter.
That's good. That's easy, right?
Yeah, it's easy, yes.
Okay, your books. I have two of your books. I have the Kindle edition of Consuming the Congo, War and Conflict Minerals and the World's Deadliest Place, mm-hmm. and that came out in 2011. I also have If You Poison Us, Uranium and Native Americans, which came out in 1994. You've also written Pirate State, Inside Somalia's Terrorism at Sea in 2010. And you have two books coming out next year, both in April.
Yes, I have my first book about Africa, which was about child soldiers in East Africa, called First Kill Your Family.
Oh, right, right. Yes, I was getting to that one.
Okay.
All right, but is that coming out as a newer version in April, on April 1st?
Oh, yeah, that's what you're referring to. It's coming out in paperback edition.
Okay.
And then the new book is called Above the Din of War, and it's about my experiences in Afghanistan from 2010 and 2011, which was the second year of my life I'd spent there.
Okay. I imagine that was very interesting. We have had people on the program who are from Afghanistan and who go back there on a periodic basis and to try to help. But you mentioned a book that is going to be redone in the hard copy, First Kill Your Family.
Yes, yeah.
And you originally published that when?
Yeah, that came out in 2009, and it was a result of a year's worth of work I did in Uganda, and I've been able to travel around the world and work and write a lot of these books because of my employment with an interesting organization based in London. It's called the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. And what we do is we go into basically war zones and post-war zones, post-conflict zones, they're called. And we work with journalists and help them expand and improve their skills. And this involves a whole wide range of projects.
Peter, I hate to interrupt, but we do have to take a real quick break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5, or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
$4, $5, $6, even $7 a gallon? According to fuel industry insiders and economic experts, those are the forecasted fuel prices, with no end in sight. Fight back fuel prices with a fuel saver from airfusionsystems.com. These fuel savers can save you from 20 to 40%. They're designed to fit any vehicle, from compacts to SUVs to transport trucks. The fuel saver works on all gas, diesel, even propane engines. Easy do-it-yourself installation in about 15 minutes. And the best part? No engine modifications, no computer chipping, no running wires, no chemicals, no water, no running costs, and no maintenance. And these fuel savers come complete with all parts and accessories. See how it works at airfusionsystems.com, spelled A-I-R-F-U-S-I-O-N, systems.com. Or call 888-887-9981, 888-887-9981. Fuel savers from airfusionsystems.com. Save fuel, save money, save Earth.
Hey, meat eaters. The freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The Freeze-Dry Guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze-Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Peter Eichstadt. His websites are petereichstadt.com and petereichstadt.blogspot.com. And Peter, you were telling us about the group that you work with that allows you to travel about and interview some very interesting people and find out what's going on in other parts of the world. And then you're sharing your experiences with us.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's called the Institute for War and Peace Reporting, and what led to my first book about Africa was a project we operated in Uganda, which is in Eastern Africa, and it's well known as the Pearl of Africa, and it's a very beautiful country, relatively small. It's adjacent to Rwanda, and it also borders with the Democratic Republic of the Congo on the west, and then the Sudan, or what's now South Sudan, on the north, and then Kenya to the east. And and that's where I came across this, which I was shocked to learn about this war, rebel war that had been going on in Uganda for 20 years. And at the time, it had claimed approximately 100,000 people's lives, and I was aghast that so little was known about this war and about the rebel army, and so that set me off on a project that resulted in the book called First Kill Your Family, and what I learned was the war was being perpetrated by an organization, an army called the Lord's Resistance Army, and they survived primarily by attacking villages across and around northern Uganda and southern Sudan, and kidnapping you know, young boys and girls, and forcing them to join their army. And they would be able to do this because they take these kids at these children at gunpoint and force them to kill their friends or even members of their family. And once you know, either that or be killed themselves. So once they were once they would do that, then these young boys and girls were mentally traumatized, obviously, and could then be much more easily manipulated and forced to commit other atrocities. And it was a pretty terrible problem. And I was at first I was skeptical that I would be able to do a book about it because, you know, this war had been going on for 20 years and had gotten some press coverage, but not a lot. And it was one of these seeming tragedies that was going to continue to go on, and you know, well under the international radar, you know, indefinitely. And however, I made some proposals, and I contacted some people in the publishing world, and I was able, with some help, to find a publisher actually right there in Chicago, and publishing company called Chicago Review Press. They were more than happy to pick up, you know, do the book and take a chance. And I was ecstatic, of course, and I felt that you know, this was a, you know, what I was able to do was to call some attention to this very, very serious problem.
Right. Now, who is funding these people that are perpetuating this war?
Well, it's actually not a funded by any particular group. The way this rebel army has been operating is that they operate as they roam around the region and they just steal and loot and take whatever they want. And for quite a while, from 1986 until 2006, which was a full 20 years, they were supported by Sudan, the Sudanese government. And the reason they were doing this was because, you know, they were following this old axiom that, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And at the time, there's been a long-standing, you know, civil war took place in Sudan, which just recently resulted in South Sudan becoming its own separate country. Well, while this war was going on between Sudan and South Sudan, South Sudan was being supported by Uganda at the time, and since this rebel army was fighting the Ugandan government, Sudan decided they could would cause as much trouble as possible for Uganda by supporting this rebel army, and in northern Uganda, which they did. And this rebel army, they also used it a little bit to fight the South Sudanese rebels on occasion. So it was kind of a complicated mess, you know, with various players. And I know too, you know, most Americans, most outsiders coming into a situation like that, it's difficult to sort out who's who. But it was a complicated mess, and to answer your question specifically, Sudan was supporting these people for a long time, and that allowed them to continue to fight. And, you know, by the time I got there, which was in 2005 and 2006, the rebel army had in fact been pretty well weakened, and to the point that they and part of this was due to pressure that was brought by the United States against the Sudan government, The rebel army was crippled to the point where they finally agreed to begin peace talks. And so part of my a number of chapters of my book is has to do with the peace talks and the experiences I had making contact with the rebel army, the Lord's Resistance Army, and talking with some of the people that were involved with the army about why they were doing, I mean, who they were and why they were doing what they were doing.
Was it about the resources in the region? I know they're very resource rich.
Well, ultimately, specifically for the Lord's Resistance Army, it's not about resources, but resources do come into play in the region. And South Sudan, as you know, has significant oil reserves, which is the primary reason between the primary reason that Sudan and South Sudan were fighting. As you know, South Sudan is a Christian country, and Sudan itself is Muslim. So there was a kind of a tug of war between these two groups as to who is going to control the oil resources in South Sudan, and that fomented the war there. And this rebel army was kind of part of the mix, although they didn't really stand to gain anything per se, because of what was curious to me, which is what you're driving at, as to why, why would a rebel army that conscripts children, why would they continue doing what they've been doing? And I struggled to answer that question, and the only answer that I can provide is that their mission initially had been to try to topple the Ugandan government, but since they were never able to do that, they became so ingrained in their lifestyle of self-perpetuating themselves by attacking and attacking villages and stealing and looting and killing, that became their reason for existence.
Right.
And now the government, or ironically, the rebel army has been chased out of northern Uganda, is now in roaming around the region to the west. It's in an area of Central Africa where South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and the Central African Republic meet. And the army is very much alive and well and continues to do the same thing, which is simply loot in order to survive.
Well, there were some implications in the book Blood Diamond, also in the movie, about the seizure of children and having them go through these horrible experiences and having them actually kill their family. It is just amazing to me that that these children survive at all, and a lot of them don't. They get killed.
It's incredibly traumatizing, and that one of the things that I've seen in my especially traveling around the country and giving readings and lectures about this issue is that a lot of people, it's difficult for Americans and it's difficult for Western Europeans to understand the psychology and the reason that organizations like the Lord's Resistance Army exist. And you have to adjust your perspective a little bit. Now, I'm not saying accept it, but which of course we don't or can't, but you have to adjust your way of looking at what happens. And a lot of it is because of the immense and intense poverty that exists there.
Right.
It generates a whole different way of looking at life.
All righty, Peter, we are going to a break. We'll be right back on the other side.
In Introducing Michael Anthony's Private Stock Herbal Formulas, infection killer for all infections, viral, bacterial, fungal, parasitic. My Rapid Heal for all injuries enables the body to mend super fast. My System Toner, the Rejuvenator, tune-up for the entire body, head to toe, keeping it youthful, the mind positive and focused. Dragon Juice, the Revitalizer, pure power in a delicious drink. If your body's dragging, you need Dragon Juice. Lung formula for asthma and all lung afflictions, arthritis fix, great tasting herbal teas and more. Michael Anthony's Private Stock exclusive herbal formulas. To find out more, call 845-231-1094 or email Michael Anthony's Private Stock at yahoo.com. Michael Anthony's Private Stock exclusive herbal formulas.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
How important is the air we breathe? Our air purifiers are made with a patent process called Aeron. Aeron is different from ozone. Aeron does not create oxides of nitrogen like other ozone machines. Unlike any air purifiers out there, the Aeron generator adds additional energy, creating higher forms of oxygen. And when the Aeron molecule comes in contact with pollution, the pollution is quickly oxidized. These higher forms of energized oxygen have more power to oxidize pollutants, removing dust, pollen, mold, and other particles from the air. Destroying chemical fumes and toxic gases kills mold, mildew, fungi, and kills many viruses and bacteria in the air and on surfaces for a healthier, cleaner environment. Visit our website, republicbroadcasting.org. That's republicbroadcasting.org. Just click on our online store or call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Be prepared. How important is the air we breathe?
Today is Peter Eichstadt. His websites are petereichstadt.com and petereichstadt.blogspot.com. And the website for the Institute for War and Peace Reporting is iwpr.net. And you were talking about our perspectives and our perspective here in this country and in Western Europe, that we just don't we have no comprehension about the poverty or the situation that these people live in, and so it's very difficult for us to understand the desperate situation and why people do what they do.
Yeah, it's very difficult. You know, we especially in America tend to live in a I call it a luxury bubble, and we tend to look at the world through our own perspective, which of course is natural. But we live in a highly industrialized society. It's well organized. The government functions as it should, or as I'm making broad statements, of course, but the government functions. You know, the post office works. The police, when a crime happens, the police will show up. And, the schools, you grow up as a child and you fully expect to be able to go to school. You expect to come home to live in a house that's taken care of, and you expect to be able to eat. As you grow older, you expect to, we live in a world of computers. You expect to, you know, I know my, you know, my nieces and nephews, you know, are already, you know, computer literate by the time they're 8 and 9 years old. You know, all of these things, none of these things exist, you know, in these remote regions of Africa. There is, you know, no health care. There are virtually no schools. There is no clean water. There is no employment. There was no expectation of anything beyond a subsistence existence. And it, you know, when you grow, when you live in circumstances like this, you know, there's no computers. There's only until recently were was mobile phone service available in much of these regions. And if you get beyond, and even still, if you get more than about 5 miles beyond these major metropolitan areas, there is no communication except for satellite phones. And of course, people don't have satellite phones because it's so expensive. And so, you know, in these kind of circumstances, give rise to people who will, you know, out of desperation, will do anything they can to survive. And once people get their hands on a gun or some kind of weapon, you know, they're off and running. It's very easy to form an army.
Right. So this is
a group, you know, a gang, you know.
So this is really the epitome of a third world country, that where no structure exists, where the government is not functioning at all, if there is a government. It seems, and you mentioned gangs. It seems that the whole country is run by gangs and violence and murder and plundering and.
Yeah, well, that was one of the ironies about the, you know, what I wrote about, and the ironies about the existence of the Lord's Resistance Army, is that in the, you know, Uganda is not that large a country. It's about the size of Oregon, and but the whole northern part of the country was a war zone that, and it was because of this Lord's Resistance Army. And the great irony is that Uganda is considered one of the most advanced, and it is, in fact, one of the most advanced countries in Africa. The southern part of Uganda is very developed. It's very organized. The police and schools and government are all functioned. Capital, Kampala, has one of the best hospitals in Eastern Europe or Eastern Africa. It's second only to Kenya as one of the best shining examples of a successful African country. Ironically, the northern part of the country when I was there in 2005 and 2006 was a virtual no man's land. And that's what was one of the impetus that I had to write this book, is that here in the midst of this seeming African success story was this terrible tragedy.
How did it get that way? Was there a particular thing? Was it?
Most people, I think, are familiar with former dictator Idi Amin. And Idi Amin was the subject of a fairly successful movie called The Last King of Scotland. And this Idi Amin was a maniacal dictator who took control of Uganda in the late 70s. And he was eventually defeated and driven out of the country by a man named Yoweri Museveni. And Museveni got some help from some surrounding countries and was able to topple Idi Amin. Well, he typically what happens in these situations is governments are changed by means of military coup. And he was able to ultimately defeat Amin and then take control of the government.
Okay. We are going to a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself from anything out of balance concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
We've been helping people for over 18 years.
Call Zero Debt Guaranteed, 800-477-9256. Ask for free information. No obligation. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com now.
Today is Peter Eichstadt. His websites are petereichstadt.com and petereichstadt.blogspot.com. And you were talking about Amin and how they got rid of him. And
I'm talking about the origins of the Lord's Resistance Army. And I just to make it simple, it was like it. After Idi Amin was toppled, the Uganda was plunged into a civil war that lasted about 5 years, and the defeated elements went north, and they continued to fight. And Museveni became president in 1986, and this is when the Lord's Resistance Army was formed. So for 20 years, you know, they carried this, they continued this civil war, so to speak, you know, on and off for 20 years, and that's what resulted in all the death and destruction up there. But the problem was, the real confusing aspect of this war was that the people who of northern Uganda were the ones that who had initially supported the, you know, or were composed one side of the civil war. They ended up being the victims of the Lord's Resistance Army instead of supporting the Lord's Resistance Army. And because the people of the North became tired of civil war, they refused to they didn't want the war to continue, and they refused to support the, what had become the you know, the continuation of the resistance against the Ugandan government, which was the Lord's Resistance Army. So the people in the north refused to support that rebel army. So instead of disbanding, the rebel army turned on the people that had initially supported it. And they began, you know, stealing children, you know, boys and girls from the various villages, taking the food, you know, water. They would steal weapons, you know, whatever they needed to survive.
Right.
And that's how, you know, that was the origin of the Lord's Resistance Army. And it continued on. You know, it eventually drew, it gained support from Sudan, as I said, because Uganda was helping South Sudan in their civil war. So, anyway, the army was able to exist and continue to exist and continue to commit atrocities for 20 years.
Right. Now, we know that foreign interests have a lot of influence in the area. They're, of course, interested ever since the Belgian Congo days when you had King Leopold down there with all his shenanigans, and other countries have gone into African countries to exploit the resources. Are there interests there that now currently that are benefited by all of this chaos?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. One of the points that I argue fairly strongly in my book, and I continue to argue, is that, as I said, Uganda is one of the most advanced and most developed countries in East Africa, and is used as an example of a success story. So I always wondered why the Lord's Resistance Army could not be defeated by the Uganda government, since they had one of the best trained armies in Eastern Europe or Eastern Africa as well. And I had to come to the conclusion is that the existence of the Lord's Resistance Army was a real benefit to the Uganda government, because they were able to collect millions and millions of dollars worth of foreign aid to help them fight this army. And in reality, what I found out was that Uganda, while they were accepting and soliciting, you know, millions of dollars in aid, used the bulk of its forces to, instead of going after the Lord's Resistance Army, they went over to eastern provinces of the Democratic Republic of the Congo and began to help themselves to all of the mineral wealth in eastern Congo. So in essence, what they were doing was using their war against the Lord's Resistance Army, this rebel army in northern Uganda, as a diversion for the international community, while they spent most of their time and the bulk of their forces were in eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo. And there they were able to plunder, timber was a big resource because it's such a heavily forested area. And that's one of the resources, but also huge amounts of gold and diamonds, which were taken from mines a little bit further to the north in East. But they essentially controlled through their own direct occupation and also the development of some proxy militias and armies, pretty much the whole north. If you look at a map, the northeastern quadrant of the Democratic Republic of the Congo was controlled by Uganda, and it made them very, very rich.
Well, inasmuch as they were getting money from the West, pretending to use it to fight this war, did that money buy some of those resources that the Ugandans were getting out of the Congo?
Well, what happened was that the when I was there in 2005 and 2006, and which I wrote about, was what was happening was that with all this foreign aid that was being given to Uganda, they used a very small amount of it to fight this Lord's Resistance Army in northern Uganda, conduct a civil war. And what they did is they would tell the international community that they had X number of fighters in the north, when in fact they had a fraction of those soldiers. So this money was being taken from the international community and given to the generals who were fighting, supposed to be fighting this war. So what was happening is that the Ugandan government was using this money to pad the salaries and enrich the military elite. And meanwhile, instead of using these soldiers to fight in northern Uganda, they used them to fight in the Democratic Republic of the Congo to help them control the gold mines and diamond mines. And that's what...
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Were there any corporations, multinational corporations, that had interest in the area that would benefit from these generals? Were the generals working for the Ugandan government, or were they working for some multinationals? Or was money coming from the taxpayers? Of course, it could have been coming from the taxpayers with corporate benefits, right?
Yeah, well, it's, foreign aid comes from a variety of sources, but of course, it's the largest source, of course, is taxpayer, or U.S. taxes. So, the problem, I mean, there are some multinational corporations that were, in fact, benefiting, and in particular, the gold mines in one of the largest gold mines in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo was in this town called Mungwalu, where I spent a couple of days interviewing people there, and the gold, the rights to the gold are in fact owned by a South African company, and it's an international gold production company, but what had actually happened is that the Ugandan government, in conjunction with the Rwandan government, and this was after the Rwandan genocide, they joined forces to help each other plunder the resources in Eastern Africa or Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo, and they actually drove the African or the South African gold mining company out, and then they decided the Ugandans took control of this large gold mine and began to plunder it themselves, and so there was a kind of what's called a Pan-African movement in play, in which the governments of Uganda or the people that control the governments in Uganda and Rwanda decided to help themselves to these resources instead of letting the profits of the resources be plundered by international corporations. But now, this went on for quite a while, but in the last, last 10 years, certainly, this movement has kind of died down, and the riches have been taken to the extent that they've been wanted, and now countries like the Democratic Republic of the Congo are turning back again to international corporations for and letting them exploit the resources.
Right. Now, Israel has the world's biggest diamond market. So did they have some sort of interest in the international corporations that were active there?
Well, I didn't come across any interest in terms of diamonds by the Israelis per se. As my experience was that the raw diamonds, despite the fact that there's a large international agreement to regulate the flow of diamonds out of Africa and ensure that they're not blood diamonds, that there's a lot of different ways to get those diamonds out and get them certified, and a lot of certified as non-blood diamonds. And the certification process is being subverted by corruption. And I think if you can read that book, Blood Diamonds, you know, you can see how easily, you know, that can happen. But of more interest to Uganda and Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo is gold. And gold is very important commodity there. And the gold, one of the interesting things is that Uganda is one of the largest exporters of gold from Africa. But the ironic thing is that Uganda has no gold mines.
Oh, really?
So what's happening is that the gold is being, you know, illegally taken out of these gold-rich regions of eastern Congo, and it's being smuggled across the border, and then it's legitimized and exported by legitimate exporting gold exporting companies, and it goes to places like Dubai initially. Dubai is a huge international gold market, and then from there, the gold is typically goes to countries such as Sweden or even not Sweden, but I mean Switzerland, which has a large gold industry, but. From Dubai, it goes, you know, wherever people are buying it. Now, the same is true with a similar kind of situation exists in Congo with diamonds. And a lot of these diamonds that are mined are legitimized by being smuggled out of the country, and then subsequently they get certified, and then they end up in places like. Antwerp, Belgium, which is also one of the biggest diamond markets.
Right, it has been for some time.
Yeah, so it's despite international efforts to, you know, control and regulate the illegal exploitation of resources in the Congo and elsewhere, it's very difficult because the corruption is so pervasive.
And also. Because of the poverty, people are willing to work for their slave labor
it's one of the things I witnessed personally was the complete willingness of people in eastern Congo to continue to work in these mines that produce all kinds of minerals, all a wide variety of minerals, because they really have no other employment options, and they're willing to tolerate, incredible level of abuse, including being forced to give significant portions of their proceeds to militias in order for the right to continue to work in these mines. Because, you know, from their point of view, something is better than nothing. And even if they have to give up, some of their freedom and give up, significant portions of their labor or the proceeds of the labor to militias. Now, the way international corporations come into play is like, because most of these regions are difficult to get to, there's no paved roads. A lot of these mines in eastern Congo are accessible only by footpaths, and the minerals are dug. It's like raw ore. And it's loaded up into sacks, and it's physically carried out of these locations on people's backs and along these footpaths. So the international corporations don't really come in contact with any of these minerals until they've actually been brought out of the bush or out of the jungles and then are collected in large warehouses. And at that point, people who are buyers who represent, they're like intermediaries between these, where people that own these warehouses where these minerals are collected, and then the international community. These buyers are quite often freelancers or self-employed, salespeople that function. They work for percentages, And they will secure these minerals, and then they're shipped out to, other locations where they're refined and eventually turned into usable metal products.
Oh, my. So Africa basically is just a big resource pit for anybody that wants to go in and exploit them.
That's exactly right. It's a big wide open field, and adding to the complexity of the adding to the problem is that the governments that do control, like these resources, like, and I use the word control lightly, these governments themselves are corrupt, and they're very, very susceptible to bribery, especially from wealthy international corporations.
All righty, Peter. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE and colloidal silver, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system, and fire piston, or just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today. Toll free 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Call now 800-537-1339.
Wouldn't you agree? Healthy people are happier and more productive. Obesity is the root cause of many health problems. Do you want to lose weight safely, look sexy and attractive without side effects and no chemicals? Lose weight without the side effects safely with Zeno's Organic Dietary Supplements. Made in the USA, 100% USDA certified organic. Visit www.zenos.com. That's www.zenohs.com. Try our products risk-free for a limited time offer. No purchase necessary. You only pay shipping and handling. Get your old, sexy body back now. Visit Zenos.com. Get your free supplements now. Visit Zenos.com right now. www.zenohs.com. That's www.zenohs.com.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Our guest today is Peter Eichstadt. His websites are petereichstadt.com and petereichstadt.blogspot.com. And we were talking about the exploitation in Africa. And, of course, you have to look at these corporations and of course, the middlemen who collect a lot of commission, no doubt. But certainly people understand deep down that there's a lot of corruption there, and that Africans are being exploited, that they ought to be, that the people in Africa ought to be able to benefit from the resources of their own country instead of having foreigners come in and drain them while they live in poverty and desperation.
Yeah, well, that's what one of my serious concerns about the government of the Democratic Republic of the Congo is that they, you know, people don't realize that you know what a large and resource rich place the Congo is, and it has you know, as you know, some of the background as you mentioned earlier is that initially Europeans, King Leopold of Belgium, claimed the Congo, that's why it eventually became known as the Belgian Congo. But he didn't claim it as a colony of Belgium. He claimed it as his personal property, and that's the status it took. So he pretty much did what he wanted with the country and exploited minerals there, as well as rubber and an elephant tusk for ivory, and this kind of set the tone for the exploitation, you know, of the Congo, which has continued today. And the current government there is one of the most hopelessly corrupt governments in the world, and they've been running around making deals with you know, corporations and companies in other countries for years. And the problem is that there's these large fees and things like that paid, you know, bonuses and agreements, you know, paid to the government by international companies and corporations. And unfortunately, a lot of this money disappears, and it supposedly goes into the government, but in fact, huge amounts are siphoned off into private bank accounts by the political leaders. And despite this, you know, vast amount of resources that exist in the Congo, which, you know, theoretically should make it one of the richest countries in the world, and is in fact, you know, one of the poorest, has no real functioning government, it has no functioning school system, and has no functioning healthcare systems. The eastern part of the country, which I focus a lot of my work on, is completely separated from the western part of the country, which is where the capital of Kinshasa is, by a jungle. And there's virtually no roads from one side of the country to the other.
Amazing. We are going to our 60-second top of the hour break. We will be back after a station ID and a word from our sponsors. So stay tuned. Be right back.